From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have the part 2 of the talk by Sri Ravi Mariwala. Sri Ravi came to Bhagwan's fold at a very young age and was a part of the Bal Vikas program. He later got the golden opportunity to speak in front of Bhagwan in Mumbai and in Prashanti Nilayam in 1979. In 1982, he joined the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and graduated with a gold medal in MBA. After his graduation, following Bhagwan's instructions, he joined the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences as one of the first staff members. Sri Ravi is fortunate to have had many interactions with Bhagwan and currently lives in North Carolina, United States. As mentioned earlier, this is the part 2 of the talk that was delivered at annual Silent Retreat, which was conducted between October 12th and 14th in 2018 at Sloatsburg, New York. The first part of this talk was broadcast on the 19th of June 2019. Stay tuned, dear listeners. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some melodious songs by Swami students. And at 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. With that, over to Sri Ravi Mariwala.
Om Sri Sai Ram. Pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. So yesterday we met for the first time, many of us, and we spoke about the power of satsang, which is the company of the holy. And when you are in the company of the Sadguru, that is the highest form of satsang you can think of, you can ever imagine. And that came to most of us unasked. None of us at least remember doing that type of investment in penance for decades. And that led us to this great opportunity to spend time as devotees or students, to get interviews, to stay in Vrindavan, to become aware of the life and presence of a divine teacher, of that magnitude, that is unimaginable for many, many centuries. But before I go ahead, I want to ask you all one question. How many of you are here? How many of you are present here? That's not a very encouraging show of hands, but I guess you are present. So let me ask you, at least for those who raise their hands. I saw many of you closing your eyes, trying to absorb the silence, trying to feel the vibration that you have all created through your prayers, through your worship. But how many of you noticed that there is another picture of Swami as you enter the hall? Excellent. Now, how many of you made eye contact with that Swami? What did you notice about his robe? I see some of you turning to look back, but it's out of reach. Next time, stop and look. So that picture is so compelling. As I walked in, I feel Swami is telling me, hey boy, what is this laptop and a head full of ideas that you are carrying? Leave it all here and go ahead. And then when I looked at his robe, it was all ruffled. And it seemed to tell me, I have rushed to be with you all. I haven't even had time to get dressed and to impress you with my looks. I have come rushing to be with you all. So we have to start noticing, we have to start feeling. And As you know, when you talk to the youngsters today, they all know which are the branded items in the market, who are the models who are behind those advertisements, right? And we invest so much time in following and liking on Facebook, right? And once Swami told us, and I was telling some of our friends last night, that Shabari actually, all of you have heard of Shabari, right? The great woman devotee of Lord Rama. And Swami said, when he started this discourse, I thought, where is Swami going? He's just destroying our ideals and spoiling us with bad ideas. And Swami said, Shabari ko anta brahmale. Shabari was completely deluded. I said, Swami, what are you going to say next? And he said, none of those things that she imagined had any chance of coming true. But she threw herself into a frenzy and said, oh my God, what happens if Rama comes here? Where will he sit? He would be so tired by walking so long in the forest. And what if there's a thorn in his foot? I have nothing to remove the thorn. And then if he asks for a little bit of water, where will I go at the last moment to run for water? And she threw herself into this frenzy. And her whole mind turned away from the world and turned towards Rama. And as her mind fell into the trap of following this delusive, imaginary sense that Rama would come there, the mind itself was captivated by this movement within her, in herself. And Swami said, that madness that Shabari had, that Brahma, that delusion, which according to the worldly people is a delusion, that is Brahma. And it is that type of delusion that can drag the Lord to you, that can bring Swami out of the photograph to be by our side. And the proof of that Swami coming out of the photograph, Swami coming alive for us, is what you can feel when you allow that presence to grow within you. When you allow the bhajan, when you allow yourself to participate in the bhajan uninterrupted. Fortunately, you don't have your cell phones. But sometimes I see, I'm so deep in the bhajan and I make the mistake of looking at my cell phone and there's some stupid coupon from Kmart or this mart. And it just, I land with a thud. I crash land. And that is what we are doing to ourselves most of the time. The upliftment, the elevation that Bhagwan is providing us is fantastic. And the most important thing I have come to realize in the last year or so is that we, and I'm talking to myself a lot, is that acknowledge that. Acknowledge that. Recognize that. It's not enough to praise Him, to sing His glory, to talk about His miracles. Acknowledge the miracle that He has worked in our hearts. See that. Find that. Ask yourself, hey, what is this guy Ravi talking about? What is this miracle that Swami has worked in my heart? I don't know that. Search for that. Ask Swami, Swami, what is it that you have done to me? And you will become aware of a stirring in your own heart, of a tangible feeling. And when we move from concepts, ideas and arguments to a tangible feeling which you can localize in your body, then you know that all these so-called vibrations have a place and that they are true. So if you look at this picture, There are two placards there. What are the two placards in the picture? Anybody? Chief guest and chancellor. So we have the choice to invite Swami to merely be our guest and then to go away, or to be our chancellor and to rule our hearts forever. And that is the significance of that mace that is there. If we accord him that supreme presence in our heart, then he becomes our chancellor. You all seen pictures of what Michael did in Florida, right? That is the way the flow for Swami should be. When the flow of love is allowed to be built up, most of the time we are not allowing it to build up. When we allow the flow of love to build up to a torrential level, that is when everything will change for us. So while we talk about spirituality, we talk about Kundalini, we talk about mind control, we talk about the need to be in satsang and to explore the meaning of words like Atma. If you ask me, this avatar was omnipotent, omniscient. He could do anything for us. And even if we just don't go down the path of looking at the scriptures and debating them and trying to practice them, even if we just sit down and look at his picture and love him and cry to him, all can be added to us. So yesterday we spoke about this spiritual hunger. And Swami says, he uses the word in the middle of the letter, if you can decipher it, he says, consciously or unconsciously does suffer from spiritual hunger. Why does Swami use the word suffer for spiritual hunger? I thought it is something that should delight us, because the vast majority of people on earth don't seem to be troubled by that spiritual hunger. But the reason Swami uses the word suffer is that once you get that longing, it also tells you another story of your being incomplete. And all of a sudden, the wonder, the sense of awe at beautiful sceneries, beautiful forms, beautiful achievements starts decreasing. And the sense of wonder and the sense of awe for the inner awakening starts to arise. And if you ask me, what did Swami do for these 85, 86 years that he worked with all of us? He was trying to tell us that yes, we have to go to the master, serve him. And then he was trying to tell us that there are certain exalted beings who are manifestations of primary consciousness. And these are available, these are accessible very infrequently over time. But then these are the ones who can exhilarate us, elevate us. And Swami says in this quote that I am Sarva Devata Swarupa. Difficult words to pronounce even for us Indians. But Sarva means all. Devata means Godhead. Swarupa means form. And Swami is telling us, Swami is taking the liberty to talk to us as if we are his own, hoping that we will understand and not misunderstand. But he's telling us, don't make the mistake. He says over there, let any doubt distract you. This is Sarva Devata Swarupa, the embodiment of all divine forms. And as part of his work, Swami plays many, many roles. But in the picture, notice how he is looking up. And that is the difference between all the roles that he plays and his eventual objective. It's so funny that as you associated with Swami, you started to think of him in terms of the particular role he was playing. Every evening, 2 or 3 minutes before bhajan would start, Swami would call the vice chancellor, the registrar and the controller inside the interview room. And they would relate to Swami as if he was the chancellor of the university, their boss, and they would make a report to him and they would receive instructions about how to run the university. People who went inside the interview room would ask Swami, "Swami, when will my son get married?" And Swami would say sometimes, "Show me your hand," and say, "Another 3 months." Or somebody would say, "Swami, my company has been making a loss for 9 years. When will it turn profitable?" And he would say, close his eyes and say, "Next July." Somebody else would fall at his feet and say, "Swami, my mother was not able to come. She's hospitalized." And the hand would wave and the holy ash would pour out into your palm. Each of these people who are interacting with Bhagwan, and this is a mistake we all make, start imagining that Bhagwan is an astrologer. Bhagwan can fix our destiny. Bhagwan can see the future. So he has the foresight which none of us have. And there's a beautiful story of one of our professors who went to Swami for the first time before he was joining the college. And Swami said, "So what do you do?" He said, "Swami, I have many abilities. I teach Hindi. I'm a learned Sanskrit scholar. And by the way, I'm also an astrologer, Swami." So Swami, you should never play into Swami's hands like that, because then you don't know what is coming. He could have just stopped by saying, "Swami, I'm a Sanskrit scholar and a Hindi teacher." And he said, "Swami, I also know quite a bit of astrology." I said, "Oh, is it? So show me your palms." He showed Swami his palms. Swami said, "These lines, those lines and all that." And he said, "But I don't see any lines," Swami said. And all of a sudden when he looked at his palms, he saw that there were no lines anymore. So when I heard about this incident, this professor incidentally taught our class for a few months. Very learned, very wonderful person. And it struck me that we've started ascribing and putting labels on Swami based on our beliefs, based on our understanding, based on our needs. Oh, he can cure cancer, he can cure the cripple, he can tell the future. Swami would pick between 3 photographs. Many devotees would take photographs of potential matches for their children, and Swami would pick 1 picture and they would go and get their son or daughter married to that individual. And that is one of the biggest things that we are in the habit of labeling Swami with, those roles. And the other aspect is that sometimes we want to call Swami mother. Somebody lost their father in childhood and he thinks of Swami as his father. And one day Swami told us, all these are highly limiting. And the way Swami was acting that out with his body was that he wanted to shrug off those roles. And he felt that they are very constraining, they are very limiting. Because imagine, For the one who has cured so many, who has literally moved the clouds away when he was 6 years old, he told Venkamma, Venkamma Vanaradu, little boy, saying, Venkamma, don't worry, it won't rain, you don't need to clear the farm. For the person of that cosmic capability to be thought of as a fortune teller, as a future prediction person, as an astrologer, or even as a person who can cure cancer, is literally belittling him. So we have to, as we come into this retreat, remember that. And the guru, who is so simple, I put that picture there because in the early years, I don't know how many of you know, that there was no pujari in the temple. And I saw outside where there's a beautiful image of Christ, it says there, I am humble. Amongst the many things that the Lord is, one thing for sure is that He is very, very humble. And look at that picture of Swami dressed up like a pujari himself. And I don't know whether you know, but Swami used to do aarti for His own pictures because there was nobody to offer aarti. And then there's a lovely story about the Pata Mandiram, which is the old mandir before this grand mandir, which is, as Brother Srikant was chanting in the morning, on the shores of the Chitravati, our mansion of love, the mansion of our heart, really is that Prashanti Nilayam. But before we were allowed to build that mansion there, there was another small mansion that was called the old mandir. And as devotees started moving to Puttaparthi, some of them took up permanent residence in Puttaparthi, then they realized that somebody was cleaning up the hall of the mandir early in the morning, and it was ready by the time all these devotees walked in like kings. The hall was all ready. It was all cleaned. The altar was decorated. The flowers were put. And everything was spick and span. And some of those old women inquired, who does this cleaning early in the morning? So the other lady told her, what, you're not getting sleep or what at night? Why are you worried? Somebody's cleaning the hall, you happily sleep. She said, no, I want to start offering this seva to Swami. And then she asked around. Turns out that it was our avatar, Satya Sai Baba himself, who woke up at 3:45 every morning. And he would come and clean the whole hall, arrange the altar. So these two women got together and they told Swami, Swami, this is not fair, we worship you, but it is you who are cleaning the hall every morning, is what we heard. Swami was quiet. Said, Swami, we would like to do it. Again he was quiet. Next morning, they came at 6 o'clock. Again the hall was spick and span. The altar was arranged. The flowers were in place. He said, what is this? Swami doesn't want to do this, want us to do this? So they again went up to Swami and said, Swami, we want to do this seva. So Swami said, oh, do it. Just those two words. Again next morning they woke up. They came to the hall at 5:30. Again they saw everything had been done. The hall was spick and span, the flowers were in place. Spiritual hunger. Next morning, they woke up at 2:45. There's no other way to beat the avatar but to do better. They woke up at 2:45. By 3:45, the hall was done, the flowers were arranged. Swami came in at 3:45. He saw them, he smiled, and he said, come and take namaskar. And from that day onwards, the mantle of this work of cleaning the hall moved from Swami to the devotees. But this is really so touching. And the message that it gives me is that it's not enough to talk. It is not enough to offer to help. It is important to do it. I love this picture of Swami because as I read many books of spiritual masters as a student, one thing that completely convinced me was that our contact with the Lord and the contact of every devotee with his Lord is not new. And Swami says, Ma Nava. Nava in Hindi means new. And Swami says, Manava means not new. We have all been around for a long time, wearing different clothes, different garments, coming sometimes in the west, sometimes in the east, sometimes in the north, sometimes in the south. But we feel so much belonging to where we are in this lifetime. But Swami is beyond all of that. And He knows us from hundreds of lifetimes at least. But every time He met us for the first time, He showed that anxiety, that excitement, and that love in interacting with us. And there's a beautiful story of Christ here. It is said that when Jesus first met each of His disciples for the first time, and when He looked into their eyes, He saw. It played out in front of His mind what Peter, Matthew, Luke, John and others would do for Him and for the Lord throughout their lives. And He also saw how most of them would be crucified. I don't know whether you know, but almost all the disciples of Christ, the direct disciples, were crucified. And it is said, it's such a beautiful and touching thought, that as Christ looked into the eyes of each of these disciples when He met them for the first time, He saw exactly what they would do for Him and how they would put their life, how they would give their lives up for Him. And that is what Swami saw when He met each one of us for the first time. And that's why I keep inviting you to go back to your first meeting with Him, because that is so important. That is the point of time in which this spiritual hunger bore fruit. And then Swami says, in that first meeting when he accosts us, when He looks into our eyes, He has said this in an interview, I can see your hearts clearly like the things inside a glass cupboard. Some people's hearts are totally dark. I do not try to do anything to such people. Some people's hearts glow brightly. I do not do anything to such people either. Some people's hearts have a small glimmer like a candlelight. My work is to ensure that this small glow is transformed into a bright light. And after that first meeting, He accepts our worship, holding our offerings close to His body, allowing them to adorn His divine being. And look at those pictures. How He's holding on to the garland in the black and white picture. And I want to tell you a little bit about my own experience. This was in 1979, and as I told you yesterday, I was really going down a wrong path. I was in very bad company. I was starting to actually do bad things, not just think and be in bad company. I was taking it to the next level. And that's when, how many of you have heard of Edgar Cayce? Fantastic. So I read Edgar Cayce as a student, and then I understood what had happened to me. And when they asked Edgar Cayce, you know, Edgar Cayce spoke a lot about karma. And everything is karma. And it's fascinating to see how he describes the impact of certain types of karma. Especially when there's a lady who's 16 and has had a major accident. She's a millionaire, by the way. And she's crippled for the rest of her life. And she goes to Edgar Cayce with her family and say, what is this? How can this be? He said, this girl, 4 or 5 lifetimes ago, was the wife of a Roman soldier. And in the arena, when there were the gladiators and they were fighting, a lion tore out the thigh of one of those gladiators. And you proudly and arrogantly laughed aloud. And Edgar Cayce says, mocking at a person arrogantly is considered karma of the highest weight. So when I had this opportunity, the way Swami entered my life was through my Balvikas gurus. And that's why it's very important for us Sai devotees not to belittle our role in his mission. His role in his mission was full. In fact, there was no Sai Baba. There was only the Sai mission. From the time he woke up to the time he retired, it was only his mission that was his burning passion. And it is so important for us, while we invest in our personal growth, we have to also start sharing. We have to start giving. We have to start leading. And we have to stop thinking that we are not leaders. We often think when somebody asks us to give a speech that, oh, no. I'm not qualified to speak. So one of our leaders in Puttaparthi, Mr. Krishna Kumar, he's also written a book. He was asked by the trust, please speak on this occasion. And he said, no, I am not qualified. So then he went to Swami and he said, Swami, they're asking me to speak. He was a very senior leader in the hospital. And Swami said, okay, but what do you think is going to change? Today you're not qualified. Do you think you're going to be qualified tomorrow? Or after 3 births? Or after 10 births? You're never going to be qualified. It's not about qualification. The distance of a 10-story building versus Empire State from the sun. What are you talking about? So you're never going to be qualified. And then Swami said a very sweet thing. He said, start earning my grace by participating in my mission. Start earning my grace. So let's not think that we are any less. For me, the role of that Harvard-trained lawyer, Mr. Nanavati, who was my Balvikas guru, what I learned from him, the impact that he and his wife had on my life, is what has made me what I am today. And that's why I say we all have a great role to play in our own circles of influence. And at that point, I was so influenced by these two gurus of mine that I started to want to make a change. And you will not believe it. This has happened to me about 4 times so far in my life with Swami, that every time I've taken a concrete step, I've done something about something that needs to be fixed, I've taken a step or I've called out intensely to Bhagwan, the results have been there in minutes, nay seconds. And at this point, when I realized what I was doing and how I was walking down the wrong path, I confided in my mom and I started to feel repentant, and the phone rang. And it was no less than Mr. Indulal Shah, who called and said, you know, Swami is coming to Mumbai in 4 or 5 days. We don't have another speaker. we want your son to speak. So she said, my son is not a speaker, sir. He's in his 7th grade. He said, yes, we want him to speak. And that was the opportunity that I got. And when you look at this picture, just like in the previous picture, Swami actually, before he accepted my garland, he did a very strange thing. I had my garland in my hand, and Swami, ignoring the garland, first came and gave me a hug. A proper hug on a stage with about 25,000-30,000 people. He kept them all waiting. And that is what he does for us. The masses don't mean anything for Swami. Every individual matters for him. And that's why I say your first meetings are very important. Swami crushed me and my flower garland in his embrace. And then took the garland and put it around himself, not wanting to leave even that act undone, incomplete. And you can see the half-hearted way in which I am taking namaskar. For that act of grace of Swami, I should have died and remained at his feet. And then throughout this opportunity to speak, he kept on looking at me. And what does the master do when he looks at you? It is not the look of the senses. It's not the light rays going into the rods and cones in Swami's eyes and going into his retina. It is the sheer infusion of grace from the Lord to the individual. And when I completed my speech and went to take namaskar, Swami bent down and he said, be very careful, that footstool has got pointed edges. And then he made me sit on his left, and throughout the next speaker's talk, he rubbed my spine, I don't know, 25-30 times. And I have no memory of that, but my mother, who was given a special place because I was speaking, said, I was wondering, what is Swami doing to you? Didn't you notice it? I said, no. I was overawed. I was overwhelmed. I'd never seen that hair like that from such close quarters. And he was bending down and talking to me, and I was mesmerized. I was awestruck. I was losing myself in that vision of Swami, that hair. And Swami spoke to me. It was like a private interview on a public stage. And he told me all kinds of things. He told me when to come to his college. And incidentally, he told me, when he said, what do you want? I said, Swami, I want to come to your college. And see, this is what I'm telling you, brothers and sisters. How life unfolds and where it starts and who does what is so important. So if somebody comes to you and asks for advice regarding Swami or how to pray or how to change or how to give up a bad habit, it's a huge thing you're doing for him or her. My life changed completely because of Mr. and Mrs. Nanavati. And then when Swami asked me, which grade are you in? I said, Swami, I'm going to the 8th grade. Swami said, after 10th you come. And then I said, no, Swami, my father will not allow me to come. He's not a devotee. And Swami said, I know, mother has lot of devotion, but father ko andar mein hai. Father, mother has lot of devotion which you can see, I can see, but your father has devotion inside. And today, my father is 83. He lives in the ashram. He gave up his job when Swami said, you have 4 years for retirement, give up in 2 years, and came. Without thinking for a second, he gave up his job and came. And today, even after Swami's samadhi, he goes for every darshan and bhajan as if Swami is there. When I just think back at Swami's words, lekin, but, father ko andar mein hai. But your father has devotion inside. Insights. He knows, he plans, he sees, he reveals everything. It is for us to grab and hold on to those gems that he's giving us. I'm holding myself from telling you many associated stories, but Because when he said, come after the 10th grade, I was traveling in the train to Puttaparthi. And in the train, I had a dream. I saw only Swami's lotus eyes. And he says, I will give you admission, but not in the way you think. And I had no clue. I was completely unintroduced to the topsy-turvy life that you will now be starting to live with Bhagwan, because you have no clue what he's going to do to you. You have submitted, or you think you are starting to submit yourself to Swami, and lo and behold, welcome to the world of uncertainty. Love my uncertainty. And I didn't know what Swami meant by that dream, but I remembered it, fortunately. I will give you admission, but not in the way you think. And I was admitted. I got through the interview, group discussion. My marks were good. I wrote the entrance. I got in. But when I went to join the college, the warden said, before joining the college, I'm throwing you out. And when I was trudging back to the mandir with those heavy bags, I always think, why didn't they make roller bags in those days? I was carrying those bags back from the hostel to the mandir. And all the boys from the college who were returning at lunchtime said, this is the unique first-timer Swami student who got thrown out of the college and the hostel before he joined it. So a lot of unique things happen, but, and this is all important for us, because the spiritual path is not defined, delineated, a structured program like an master's in science or a master's in engineering. You know that if you attend so many classes and you study at night, and you come and write your exams well, then you will get your master's in engineering. Not the way it happens in spirituality. And that's why we are here. To acknowledge the fact that the only thing that matters is spiritual hunger, the meeting with the master. After that, everything is hazy. Everything is unknown. All of our life after meeting the master will be uncharted territory. If Meera found Krishna in a particular way, Tulsidas did not walk that path. If Tulsidas walked a particular path, Kasturi did not walk that path. If Kasturi walked a particular path, Dr. Gokak did not walk that path. Uncharted territory. I want you to learn and live with that phrase. Because only two things are important. Spiritual hunger, which gets you to meeting the master. And having met the master, your job is done. Your work is complete. You made it. More so when you meet the Satguru, when you meet the avatar. And when Hislop asked Swami, Swami, you talk about your mission and you talk about a plane. Do I have a ticket? Do I have a reservation on the plane? And Swami says, yes. My plane is taxiing. And Hislop, you have a seat on the plane. For how many of us have thought in those terms? How many of us have nourished our spiritual hunger enough to let it hurt? When people went and told Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, have you seen God? And he said, yes, I see him as clearly as you see me. And then he would say, but who cries for God? Is there anybody who actually cries for God? And that is the mantle of responsibility on all of us. Having known Swami, having looked at him, having loved him, to cry for him. And often as you walk the path with Swami, you may think, like I told you earlier, that Swami is good at telling the future, he can cure cancers, he can materialize things out of the sand. He brought the moon down to show the students in the Madhumalai forest. Wow! But what is most important about Sai Baba? is that he was constantly operating beyond the body and the mind. And you and me have never operated outside of the body and the mind. So all our perspectives, all our judgments, all our analysis is based on the body and the mind. But in this instance that I want to tell you, Swami had that huge torch, which was called a 5-cell torch. And the reason the avatar, who is the lighthouse for all of us, needed another 5-cell torch was that all the devotees, you know, in India, women wear a lot of gold. All the devotees, when they came to Puttaparthi, there was no rooms, there was no accommodation, they would live in the open. So the first thing anybody did when they landed in Puttaparthi was to round up their jewelry, tie it in a little piece of cloth and go seek out Swami. What fun! And then what Swami would do is, he would take that little bag of your jewelry, go to his room, open the Godrej cupboard, the almirah, and then store your cloth piece with the jewelry there. And then when you left, you would go and say, Swami, my jewelry. And without need for any labeling, Amazon has a lot to learn from Swami. He would just go to the cupboard, pick up that particular bundle of jewelry and give it to the person. And of course, it was always the right person's jewelry. But very often in Puttaparthi, there was no electricity, there was no power. So he had kept that 5-cell torch, pretty big torch, flashlight, so that if there was no power, he could go to the cupboard, open the cupboard, and in the darkness, he could put on the flashlight and then pick up the right jewelry and give it to the ladies. But that's just something for you to keep in the back of your mind, because we are like Sherlock Holmes, right? Trying to figure out where in his sleeve is the vibhuti hidden. So one day when he is about to go to bed, he tells Raja Reddy, and Swami had this habit, suddenly he would say things which you are not prepared for, and you have to just, it's like somebody throwing the ball at you, and you got to field it, got to catch it, otherwise it's gone. And he said to Raja Reddy, Raja Reddy was also lying down at Swami's bedside, and he said to Raja Reddy, Chudu, see, look, if you, and in very mystical terms, which Raja Reddy could not follow at all, if you see the light coming from my chest, you are a Krishna devotee. If you see the light coming from my forehead, it means you are a Shiva devotee. And saying that, Swami was silent and Raja Reddy was perplexed and could not sleep. Chudu, look. So he kept looking. Where should I look, Swami? And then after a few seconds, he saw light emanating from Swami's chest region and going upwards in the room towards the ceiling. Imagine if you have so many experiences, you start taking it for granted. So he had that experience and then he dozed off. He had to get up very early. And next morning Swami asked him, Chusyava, did you see the light? Swami, I saw the light. So in front of Swami, we are all very alert, very responsive, but the mind is working. The mind is spinning its stories. So he tells Swami, yes Swami, I saw the light. So he understood that this is a sign to him that he is a Krishna devotee. And then Swami went out for darshan. Now Raja Reddy could not wait. Even before he arranged and cleaned Swami's bed and folded the blanket, the first thing he did was, he took the 5-cell torch out and he grabbed Swami's blanket and he put the torch, the flashlight under the blanket, then switched it on to see whether the light that he saw last night was similar in intensity to what he was able to generate now. And our Lord is so timely, so perfect in his timing. At that time Swami opened the interview room and came in and said, oh, I forgot to take my handkerchief. And he saw what Raja Reddy was doing. And at that point, Swami tells him, Inka entara, how much more, how many more instances do you need? And it's important for us to correlate this with what has happened in the ages. This history repeats itself. It is said that when Jesus cured the hundreds that he cured, if you see the movies of Christ, right, you can see how they lowered sick people into his tents from above. And it is said that at one point, Jesus Christ was depressed because the more people he healed, the more the sick lined up for healing. We had only one opportunity with Swami. Radio Sai has put out a very beautiful program called Near and Dear. Many of us, myself included, can be included in the category of near. But all of you are really dear to Swami. And I'll tell you why we were near, but we troubled Swami. So one day when my dad moved from Mumbai to Puttaparthi, he brought an old Fiat car and I had to take that for servicing. So I sent a letter inside to Swami. In those days in the interview room, Swami used to sit in the interview room after dinner, after bhajan. And if you open the interview room door to give the letter to the attendant, you could actually see Swami's gown on the footstool. That was the privilege we had. So I opened the interview room door, gave my letter to the attendant. He gave it to Swami. I sat there for 10 minutes and then I went off. After about half an hour, all hell broke loose. Sevadal came to my house in West 7, my room, and said, Swami is waiting for you. And I ran. I came to the mandir. All the devotees had come back. Students had come back from the hostel. And Swami was standing there with my envelope like this and saying, Eppudu potunava, when are you going to Anantapur for car servicing? And people, the devotees and the students are thinking, this must be something important. And Swami is asking me, when are you taking your car for car servicing? So we really troubled Swami, if you go to see it in that way. Near to him, we put all our little and major burdens on him. But such incidents tell you that it's not important to be near, but it's important to be dear. Who is dear to Swami? The one who understands him, the one who loves him. And coming back to this, Raja Reddy puts it very beautifully in two phrases. He says, we have the habit of analyzing Swami. And why do we want to analyze Swami? Because we want to pull him down a peg or two. Oh, he is this great avatar. He is the Lord incarnate. He is the universal cosmic spirit. Pull him down a little bit. Test the blanket and the five-cell torch and see, is there any possibility of producing the light that way? And Raja Reddy says, instead, turn the flashlight, turn the beam, search for your own faults. Analyze yourself. And instead of analyzing Swami, enjoy Swami. Enjoy Swami. And then one of the other big lessons I learned as a student was to understand that Swami is extremely sincere. Despite the fact that he was so busy, oftentimes we thought Swami is just making an excuse because we were living with him. So it became like a relationship, like a human relationship. So this is a beautiful story in my life. Swami sent us in 1991 to New Delhi. He blessed us. He gave us the tickets with his own hands. He gave us bed rolls so that we could sleep on them. We carried that as Swami's blessings to Delhi. Then he put a little condition on us. And he says, you are going to New Delhi, keep in touch with Swami. So we said, yes, Swami. And he said, write a letter to me once a week. So we were a group of 5 boys. We decided in the train that Swami said, write a letter once a week. Let's write a letter twice a week to Swami. And sometimes we would struggle what to write to Swami, right? And then Swami had said, if you write to me regularly, I will also write to you. And we said, oh, come on, those days are gone. These are like Chitravati days. Swami is not going to write to us. But anyway, we will try to compel Swami. He said, write once a week, we'll write twice a week, and maybe then he will take pity on us and actually write us a letter. So we waited for about 3 months, and no letter came from Swami. So one day I wrote to Bhagwan, Swami, you promised that you will write a letter to us, but we haven't received a letter, and in 3 months we'll be coming back. Swami, we want this memory of you writing to us. In about 4 days, I got a call. We didn't have cell phones in those days. We had a little phone, land phone in the house that we were living in. And Mr. Chakravarti, he called us up. And he said, you know, I've just come out from meeting Swami. And Swami is very perturbed. Swami is very upset that you wrote to him. That Swami, you promised that you will write a letter to us, but you have not written a letter. I said, sir, what has happened? And he said, Swami is very unhappy that you don't realize that when Swami says I will do something, he will do it. And I said, sir, but I'm so sorry, but we haven't received any letter written by Swami. And he said, what had happened was that Swami wrote the letter and gave it to such a big set of letters. He wrote a common letter to 5 of us. And then he wrote individual letters to each of us on a very beautiful letter pad. But he gave that whole big chunk of letters to Mr. Chakravarti. And our address was D158 Defense Colony, New Delhi, blah, blah. And Mr. Chakravarti was such a busy person, just wrote our address as 158 Defense Colony. So the postman roamed the whole defense colony and he has made an annotation on the envelope saying, I have been around defense colony. It's a very big community in Delhi. I've been around defense colony 4 times, but I'm unable to find the recipients of this letter. And he sent the letter back to Mr. Chakravarti in Puttaparthi. And then Mr. Chakravarti sent us those handwritten letters with a devotee who was visiting Delhi. And we saw for a fact that he had forgotten to write the letter D and the postman had written over there that I'm unable to find the recipients. Then we got the letters. So that is just a quick look at the letters. Just see the way he writes at the end. The name is Sai, in parenthesis, God. So the important takeaway for me, and this happened many times in my life, that I would think that Swami is too busy, he's forgotten, but this would keep coming back to me, that Swami is never too busy. If he's committed to doing something to you, if he's promised you about something, wait, it will happen. So this is what Sai stands, and like I said yesterday, on the 70th birthday, Swami was kind enough to give us this breakdown of the letters, Sai. Service, adoration, illumination. And what does this adoration mean? Adoration for whom? Adoration for Sai. And what does this adoration actually imply? Does it mean that you got to place flowers at Bhagwan's feet? Does it mean that you have to follow his teachings? Does it mean that you have to make a yearly pilgrimage to Puttaparthi? And even as a student, I used to read a lot of Khalil Gibran. In fact, I openly quoted Khalil Gibran in my speeches in Swami's presence. And I invite you all to read, those of you who haven't read him, He was a Lebanese poet. He lived in New York. Fantastic insight into life, nature and God. And he says, when you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. And think not you can direct the course of love. Think not that you can direct the course of love. For love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course. And it is no mean assumption on our part to think that love has found us worthy. All of us, all people who have heard and known of Swami, who've been with him, we should rejoice, because you can rest assured that love has found you worthy. But now comes the other part, that love is in the habit of directing your course, and it shall not be directed by anybody. What it does, how it pans out for you, what happens in your life, what is your actual sadhana, how you will realize your inner reality, is not going to be defined by any scripture, by any learning that you have had, by any desire that you have about how to walk the path. So one day, at a particular point, Swami really gave us a lot of opportunity to sit at his feet, and I had a haircut a couple of days before that meeting with Swami, and I walked into the interview room. Swami called us. As soon as I sat down at his feet, he was very upset. He started shaking his head, said, no, this is not good. And we were all waiting to hear what we had done wrong now, once again. And then he said, bad boy, long hair. And he made sure that he communicated his being unhappy. And one thing we learned with Swami was, if you want your relationship to grow, just don't be defensive. Just take it. This is not an ordinary guru. There's no point remonstrating and explaining yourself. Hold on, hold your horses. Don't just explain yourself. So when he said, and we thought he's calling us in to talk some spiritual things, something important, and all he says is, oh, not happy, long hair. And I impulsively, without knowing, I touched my hair like that, because there was hardly any hair on my head. It was second day after I had a haircut. And in Puttaparthi, we used to joke that the barbers put a vessel on your head and cut everything around it. There's hardly anything left. And fortunately, though I was a young boy, that wisdom dawned on me and held my tongue. I just looked at Swami and then said, take namaskar and all of you go. He was upset. First thing I had to do, I was not thinking about the bhajan, or about my college, or about my tests. The first thing I did was, in the morning, go to the hostel barber, and he didn't come. So I went to the warden, I took permission, I walked to the mandir, I got a special haircut in the shops in Puttaparthi. Then I was at peace. And I went back. The moment we entered the mandir, at around 4:15, Swami had finished interviews, he came looking. Imagine, just put yourself in those times and that context. Here is the avatar, the administrator of so many different institutions, just completed his interviews with the devotees. There are thousands of people waiting there. And he's looking. And the moment our eyes met, he called me inside the interview room, alone. And he looked me up and down. He said, Chala Santosha, I'm very happy. And I said, I just was silent. And then he made a very beautiful statement. My last name is very long, so Swami used to endearingly call me Mari. Instead of trying to say Mari Wala and landing somewhere else, he would say Mari. And he said, Kya da Mari? And I'm just translated for the sake of time. He said, you thought that Swami is asking you to have a double haircut? And he said, I am that master. He said in Hindi, Hum aisa master hai. I am that master who will not tell you the next step until I am completely satisfied that you took the first step. And that, though it is not a mantra, it is not out of the Rig Veda, is my mantra. Kya da Mari? You think I don't know? You think I'm asking you to do stupid things? No. I am teaching you the lesson of obedience. You cannot achieve anything on this path, uncharted territory you're entering, uncharted territory. You are coming to me with all kinds of fascinating ideas and impressions that you have read in books about awareness and consciousness and universal and cosmic. And what are you going to do on this spiritual path? I am going to reduce and remove and denude your mind of all these concepts. And if you cannot even give up the first concept that you have in your mind about your own body and how it looks and how long your hair are, what are you going to do in terms of surrendering to me? You have a lot of work to do, but start with this. Get a haircut when I ask you to. So Khalil Gibran says, love will direct our course. And that direction of course that we are looking for leads us to this constant question. What is the spiritual practice for me? Is my path the path of karma, bhakti, gyan? Should I be part of the medical camp? So should I be a SSC guru? Should I be a bhajan singer? Should I just sit back in my house and meditate? And that is a constant question that dogs us. But look at that little child who was in that picture, right? And sometimes we as students learn this a little bit easier, because what is spiritual practice? Acting as Krishna, baby Krishna, is your spiritual practice. Studying in Swami's college is your spiritual practice. Being a regional president is your religious practice, your spiritual practice. Doing, thinking and constantly reminding yourself that the situation you are in now is what Swami has chosen you to do is your spiritual practice. And this is another beautiful thing he has said on page, I've mentioned the page there in that book. He says, I will not punish the physical body, but I will punish the mind. These are Swami's own words. And I have cherished these words a lot, because as a student, I saw him doing this time and again. But I will punish the mind. For those who have subjected themselves to my way, to walk in my path, I will punish your mind. But in case of some individual, I come to know that this is of no use, I will leave him to his fate. Second filter he's applying. He applied one big filter. From the rest of the world, he selected all of us. And this is not out of pride. This is factual. He selected this group and all the current people who know Swami, who've heard of Swami, who Swami has allowed them to bring Swami into their lives, to call on him. But there's another filter. And that is the filter Hislop asked Swami about. Do I have a seat on your plane or not? Yes, I'm sitting in front of you here in the interview room, Swami. But I'm still not sure that I have a seat on your plane. Isn't it a rhetorical question for Dr. John Hislop to ask? He was the chosen one. In fact, at one point Swami told him, Hislop, you could have started your own ashram. It's there in Conversations, you can read. And Swami chides him about the state of the US organization. That's a separate story. But Swami tells him, Hislop, you are so spiritually advanced. You could have started your own ashram. And I have seen Swami put down well-known great saints who we acknowledge, whom the world acknowledges. But here is Swami giving credibility to Dr. John Hislop and saying, you are so great that you... And still he asks Swami, yes Swami, all that is fine, but do I have a seat on your plane or not? So that is the second filter. The first filter is that, yes, he called us all. He came into our lives. He started to appease our spiritual hunger. He gave us that satsang, though we didn't deserve it. We had done no penance for it. He is that insertion of the third force in the two forces that Edgar Cayce talks about, which is karma and the fulfillment of karma. But then the third force is the insertion that makes you change your outlook. And when somebody has done harm to you, you don't just do harm to somebody later, but you think and you have an enlightened point of view. And he is that divine being who came into our lives to enrich us, to make us respond differently to the world. Think of money, career, family, sensual enjoyment differently. Sometimes when I look at my kids growing up, and this is Swami's grace, and I've watched the Shiva Puran quite a bit. There are some 800 serials of the Shiva Puran, and I'm fascinated by them. And over there, Shiva tells Narada that as a parent, you should never get too attached to your children. And I said, what is Shiva talking about? And he said, remember that God has given you these experiences to enjoy the experience, not to get immersed in the experience. And this has always remained with me. So when I look at my children and I enjoy how they are talking, how they have their banter, their love, their fights, and then this comes into my mind. Don't get immersed in it. Enjoy it. And I thank Swami and say, oh, this is one more beautiful, sweet experience that I am having. So it's important for us to connect with this idea that there's a second filter that is going to be applied to us, and only a few of us are going to find a seat on his plane. And therefore, as I conclude this whole idea, it is not about what is spiritual practice. Is it 108 times japa on the japamala? Is it arranging flowers at the feet of Swami in your altar? Do you feel bad that you did not attend the last medical camp? What is this sadhana? What is this spiritual practice? As a student, it was that double haircut for me. But I'll tell you another example. Look at how he is in that picture, stern. And Swami did many unique things, and sometimes a lot of these things haven't been recorded in the books because the writers of the books were not privy to what was actually going on. This is a very sweet thing that happened, sweet but scary. So once Swami started a series of lectures and he asked the warden to have two boys speak before him in that series of lectures. So what? That's very common. You always have 1, 2, 3 boys speaking before Swami's speech. What's so special about it? We found out on day one. The first day, the two boys, they were handpicked by Swami. Swami would call the warden every day. Even that is not rare. Most of the speakers in front of Swami were in any case handpicked. So it was all business as usual. And the warden told those two boys to get ready for their speeches. They were ready for their speeches. They spoke. Everybody clapped. Swami did not clap. He looked a little stern. And then, when Swami got up to speak, instead of the verse, the poetic verse that he sings, the first sentence was, "These boys who spoke before me, they are hypocrites. They are this, they are that. And I hereby throw them out of the college." Obviously, after that, he could not sing that poetic verse anyway. So he continued into the discourse. And then, after the discourse, everybody was worried. But those two boys were definitely not anymore enrolled in the college or the hostel. They had to go pick up their luggage and do what they want. Go back home or ask for a place in the shed. They're not going to get any accommodation in the ashram because Swami is, it's a public announcement. So Swami throwing out the boys is very, very common. But not like this in the public. Swami would very often call the warden and say, "Tell that boy to go home." He says, "Swami, tell that boy to go home." And then that boy would go through a series of learnings and have to come to Bhagwan and apologize, repent, and there was work to be done. And sometimes that's how it would pan out. But in this case, a very special event was being witnessed. Swami was asking people to speak and was announcing that he was removing them from the college. Next day, two boys were asked to speak. The crowds were thick, but these boys were seasoned speakers, but they were shaking. And Swami did exactly a repeat of his act of the previous day. He got up, he did not sing, he first started by crying out loud against them and saying, "They are hypocrites, this, that, they don't deserve to be my students," and he threw them out. And this went on for 4 days. Fifth day, I was called by the warden and said, "You have to speak before Swami's talk." So now you know, it's not only about sleeping on the floor and having a cold water bath. Sometimes these tests also come your way as a student. And I'm sure all the students have been direct, indirect witnesses to many such events in their life. Now, I had fortunately already been through a couple of throwing outs, like I told you. So I was a little bit more of a warrior, veteran. And in any case, what do you do? My parents were delighted. They happened to be in Parthi. They said, "Oh wow." They had come the previous day and said, "Swami is given an opportunity to speak." I said, "Yes. And God knows what else." And then anyway, I prepared my speech and I went and spoke. Swami was very stern. Again, when it was Swami's turn to speak, he did not start with a poem. He started the same way, except that he didn't say that he's throwing me out. He says, "That boy is a hypocrite. He's not a good student," all that. And then he said, all the instances that he told in his speech, I am not aware of those instances. And I had told a lot of miracles. In particular, I had told an instance of a security guard in Mumbai who was beaten up by some thieves. And he was a devotee of Swami and how Swami came in his life and saved him and cured his wounds. And all I told 2-3 such instances. And Swami says, I am not aware of any of these instances that this boy wonderful acknowledgement and validation of everything that my own student has said. Everybody was. Fortunately, at least he didn't say, I'm throwing you out. So that's the next best thing that could happen. And then he went on to explain. And he said, and while it's fun and also scary, he said a very beautiful thing after that when he said, I don't know any of these incidents that this boy has said. And he said, I am like the sun. And that's one of the few occasions when Swami spoke about himself directly. He said, I am like the sun. Does the sun, when it shines and sends its rays to the earth and to other parts of the galaxy, know what is happening on that particular planet with the sun's rays? Does the sun know that those rays are being used to make the plants grow or the clothes dry or evaporate the water? The sun doesn't know. That was such a beautiful thing he said. And then he went on to explain how the sun's rays are like the positive and the need or the devotee's prayer is like the negative. And whenever the positive and the negative come together, the miracle happens. So the takeaway from this whole incident, and by the way, many of those boys who were thrown out, they had hard luck stories. Some, just like you are learning in your relationship with Swami, you are having your ups and downs. Sometimes you have more faith, sometimes you have less faith. Sometimes somebody tells you something and it devastates your inner relationship with Swami and then it comes back. And you fail Him and then you repent and you get it back. And sometimes you stay away from Him for long. All these things, in the same way, the students went through that very amazing struggle. I know some of them, one of them, by the way, had a hip fracture. And Swami asked him to leave the college. And he moved with his bags to the Ganesh shed and he was staying there with the hip fracture. And he earned everybody's, kind of well wishes and everybody was saying, oh, poor chap and all of that sympathy. But not Swami's. And some of those boys actually left the institution and went away. Some of them remained. And all of them today are with Swami. But what it goes to show is that we've got to not just accept Him when we bow down to Him and do namaskar and He gives us vibhuti. We have to realize that this is a very deep bond. Sometimes we don't think of it that way. And in the process of this deep bonding that you and I want to increase, subjecting ourselves to this more and more uncharted territory is going to happen. And we have to be open to that. And that's what I gained as a student through all the reading that I did of different spiritual masters and then what I saw about Swami. And I'm submitting to you that this is spiritual sadhana. Face the challenge of having to speak before Swami when you know you're going to get thrown out. That is spiritual sadhana. And having come to Him and having come, lived up to His expectations up till this point, Swami, please make sure that we are not just the ones whom You called, but make sure that You give us a seat on Your plane, Swami. Sai Ram.
सुप्तगन्धं कृतं नाम क्षीरे तिले गूढतैलं चकाष्ठे सिताग्निम् अनन्तं घृतं पूर्णमोङ्काररूपं परं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं भजेऽहं परं सद्गुरुं साईनाथं भजे a అఖండం మనోలం అకల్కాత్మరూపం విభుం వేశ్వనాథం తమద్వైత తత్వం బలం శరీరే త్రిణే చాపి వృక్షే పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం పరం సద్గురుం సాయినాథం భజేహం. విభిన్నేన ఉక్తం ఘనం శేషయానం త్రిణీత్వా